فالعشف الواقع الدين والسلام जगज्जन्यां जगदीश वैशसं स्यादेव यत्कर्मेण समीताम् करोषि फल्वाप्यूर्दीनवत्सलः Jagajananyam. In the mother of the universe, Lakshmi. Jagadisha. O Lord of the universe. Vaishasam. Anger. Syat. May arise. Eva. Certainly. Yat karmani. In whose activity? Na mine, samitita, desire, karoshi, you consider, phalgu, insignificant service, api, even, uru, very great, dina vatsalaha, favorably inclined to the poor.
Sve.
Own. Eva. Certainly. Dishnye. In your opulence. Abhiratasya. Of one who is fully satisfied. Kim.
What need is there?
Daya with her. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation. My dear Lord of the universe, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the mother of the universe. And yet I think that she may be angry with me because of my intruding upon her service and acting on that very platform to which she is so much attached. Yet, I am hopeful that even though there is some misunderstanding, you will take my part. For you are very much inclined to the poor, and you always magnify even insignificant service unto you. Therefore, even though she becomes angry, I think there is no harm for you. Because you are so self-sufficient that you can do without her. Purport. Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is well known for always massaging the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. She is an ideal wife because she takes care of Lord Narayan in every detail. She takes care not only of his lotus feet but of the household affairs of the Lord as well. She cooks nice foods for him, fans him while he eats, smooths and sandalwood pulp on his way, yes, and sets his bed in sitting places in the right order. In this way, she is always engaged in the service of the Lord. And there is hardly any opportunity for any other devotee to intrude upon his daily activities. Prithu Maharaj was therefore almost certain that his intrusion into the service of the goddess of fortune would irritate her and cause her to become angry with him. But why should Mother Lakshmi, the mother of the universe, be angry with an insignificant devotee like Prithu Maharaj? All this was not very likely. Yet, Prithu Maharaj, just for his personal protection, appealed to the Lord to take his part. Prithu Maharaj was engaged in performing the ordinary Vedic rituals and sacrifice according to karma kanda or fruit activities. But the Lord, being so kind and magnanimous, was ready to award Prithu Maharaj the highest perfection stage of life, namely devotional service. When a person performs Vedic rituals and sacrifices, he does so to elevate himself to the heavenly planets. No one can become qualified to go back home after body by means of such sacrifices. But the Lord is so kind that he accepts a little insignificant service. And therefore it is stated in the Vishnu Purana that by following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, one can satisfy the Supreme Lord. When the Lord is satisfied, the performer sacrifices is elevated to the platform of devotional service. Prithu Maharaj therefore expected that his insignificant service to the Lord would be accepted by him as being greater than that of Lakshmiji. The goddess of fortune is called Chanchala, restless, because she is very restless and always coming and going. So Bhuta Maharaj indicated that even though she might go away out of anger, there would be no harm for Lord Vishnu because he is self-sufficient and can do anything and everything without the help of Lakshmiji. For example, when Garbhodaksha Vishnu begot Lord Brahma from his navel, he did not take any help from Lakshmi, who was just sitting by him and massaging his lotus feet. Generally, if a son is to be begotten, the husband impregnates the wife and in due course of time the son is born. But in the case of Lord Brahma's birth, Garbhodaksha Vishnu did not impregnate Lakshmiji. Being self-sufficient, the Lord begot Brahma from his own navel. Therefore, Prithu Maharaj was confident that even if the goddess of fortune became angry with him, there would be no harm, neither to the Lord nor to himself.
Om Jnanatmirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shudhmate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadeshatarine Vanchakalpadarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedadhara Srivasadi Gauravaktavinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. I'm going to be back here. And today I'll speak on the topic of audacity in devotional service. Audacity. Audacious, the word has a negative connotation. That somebody who is Hindi with a chota padi baat. That somebody is in an insignificant position, that person speaks big words. So, here, Prithu Maharaj, in his prayers to Lakshmi Devi, is in prayers to Lord Vishnu, is saying that actually, my dear Lord, you take my side in case Lakshmi Devi gets angry with me. So he is being quite audacious, quite presumptuous in saying that, you know, I have got a service which Lakshmi Devi is, which normally she does, and you take my side. So we will try to analyze the devotional psychology of a devotee while serving the Lord. So I'll speak this in 3 points. After each point, I'll invite some reflections. If any of you like to, any point that struck you or any point that you found relevant, you can speak that. The 3 points I'll speak is that first, how, what exactly is humility that we are trying to serve the Lord? Then how audacity can also be used in the service of the Lord? And how, lastly, the essence of bhakti is not humility nor audacity, but it is purity. It is service attitude, pure service attitude. So normally, the first point is that we talk about humility. So humility essentially means that we don't let our ego come in the way of our service. Humility is often seen as, especially in today's world, as something which is self-demeaning, which is negative, which is psychologically damaging. Many people say that actually you should have self-esteem. And yes, self-esteem is important. But even more important than self-esteem is esteem for something bigger than yourself. For we all, yes,
yes, if we feel that I'm worthless, I'm useless, I'm helpless, yes, that kind of beating ourselves mentally is not good. But the opposite, I'm so great, I'm so powerful, I'm so smart, that is also not healthy. No, that's also not healthy. So actually, the cure for self-esteem is not self-infatuation. It is actually esteem for something bigger than oneself. When we have some purpose to live for, which is bigger than ourselves, that is what actually brings a sense of meaning to our life. When we take up some responsibility bigger than ourselves, some responsibility for something bigger than ourselves, that's when our life becomes meaningful. So, in general, the sense of meaning and purpose in our life are proportional to the sense of responsibility that we take up. So, suppose if somebody is in a house that is on fire and they are trying to find out a way to run away from the house and is all there, a firefighter also. Now everybody will be trying to run out on their own. But there is one small child somewhere over there. People who are there inside, also be conscious, this child is there. I have to take this child and then go to bed. So when you take up responsibility for something other than oneself, that is when our self-conception, our consciousness expands. As long as we are thinking only of ourselves, then consciousness doesn't expand, it shrinks. Either I am so great, or I am so greatly troubled, I am so greatly victimized. So either way, when we talk about humility, as I said, humility means to not let our ego come in the way of our purpose. So we have some purpose. For a devotee, that purpose is ultimately to serve Krishna. And let the ego come in the way means whether I get respect or I don't get respect, I am going to serve Krishna no matter what happens. So in that sense, humility is not about how fallen I am. Yes, that is part of it. But the essence of humility is, okay, I am not self-obsessed. We know that last time Vishwa Prabhupada, once a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada is the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, you are the most nothing. You are just insignificant. To say I am most fallen could also be a perverse kind of ego. Oh, I am more fallen than you. No, Prabhupada, you are just insignificant. So, the idea in bhakti is to stop being self-centered. In fact, if you consider the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna gives a hierarchy or a ladder of various levels at which we connect with him. The highest in 12.8 he says is, just live absorbed in me. Mayeva mana adhatsva mai buddhim niveshaya nivasishyasi mayeva atavudvam na samshaya. So if your mind and intellect is absorbed in me, live in me. The next he says, if you can't do that, jittam samadhatum nashaknosi mai sthiram abhyasa yoge nitato mamichyaptam nananjaya. Let's practice sadhana bhakti. Then do abhyasa, disciplined fixing of the mind only. And if you can't do that, then he says, abhyasa yajpesa kausi mat karma paramobhava madartham api karmani kurmat siddhima vapsisi. Then work for me. And if you can't even work for me, you can't do seva for me. So first is just pure devotion, absorption. Then is conscientious sadhana bhakti. Then seva. If you can't do that, then he says, So he's saying, come out of yourself. The ultimate coming out of oneself is to go into Krishna. Not in terms of merging, but in terms of absorption in service, absorption in love. But the basic point is, come out of yourself. So humility in bhakti is not just saying, I am so fallen. Essentially, it is coming out of oneself. I am not so important that I have to keep thinking about myself constantly. There is something bigger than me that is worth thinking about. That is worth my thought, my emotion, my attention, and let me focus on that. So somebody who has that attitude of focusing on something bigger than oneself, that person automatically has humility. So humility is, this is the first point I want to make. Humility essentially means to not let our ego come in the way of our service. So if somebody is saying, I am so powerful, I am so great, how many people are respecting me? Well, that's not a good attitude. So if I come into the temple, somebody comes in the temple, so seeing the Lord, that person simply says, who are the offering obeisances to me? And doesn't see anything else. Well, that is ego. But if somebody on the opposite side, somebody comes in the temple and just falls down and offers obeisances, that doesn't get up for me. So I'm so fallen, I just want to fall down and offer obeisances. Get up and do some service. Isn't it? So, so the ego, when it is too great, that can obstruct service. But if one is so self-centered, thinking that I'm so fallen, I'm so worthless, I'm so useless, then that is also unconducive to devotional service. That is also pratikul. And Krishna said that is pratikul. The Bhakti Sanat Sindhu says that is pratikul, unfavorable, should be put aside. So, humility means to not let our ego come in the way of our purpose. That was the first point. So, any reflections on this? Any thoughts, anything that struck you, anything you would like to share somewhere you read or heard, or anything similar?
Well, normally we heard that pranam is really in a role, right? So we have to think about all that, like we are less than a grass.
Yes.
We are useless. So how do we relate this to that?
Yes, of course. So, yes, we say that we are supposed to think of ourselves as humble and made of grass.
Yeah.
Then how can being humble and made of grass be related to this idea of humility? See, Prabhupada also says humility means not be conscious, to not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. That's what he says in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The idea is we see devotees also speak very strongly at times. Now, let's put it this way. What is the purpose of pranadhati sujya? The same verse is repeated. The purpose of being humbler than the blade of grass, being more tolerant than the day is, being more tolerant than the tree is, so that we can do kirtaniya sadhari. So that we can become absorbed in glorifying Krishna. So the devotee is not constantly thinking, I am lower than a blade of grass, I am lower than a blade of grass. The devotee is thinking, Krishna is so glorious, let me glorify him. Now, if for glorifying Krishna, a devotee has to take a prominent position or speak strongly, that is not against the principle of humility. So the idea of Trunadapi Sunichena is that so that we can do Kirtaniya Sadhari. So we want to be humbler than a blade of grass. The mood over there is that I am not all that important. What is important is Krishna and Krishna's service. So let me not think so much about myself. Let me think about Krishna. If Trunadapi Sunichena literally meant that I think of myself as completely insignificant, worthless, useless, then who do I think I am to glorify Krishna constantly? Where do I get that qualification at all? Even if I say not qualified, by mercy also. But even mercy has to be received as a receptacle. And if the receptacle is completely useless, then even the mercy cannot be received by the receptacle. So we are all parts of Krishna, and inherently, eternally, we are parts of Krishna. So that doesn't mean we are great. We are connected with the great. And that connection is re-established by our association with great souls. But with that connection, we are meant to serve. And the focus has to be on service. Focus has to be on the purpose. So yes, I am also important. Now let me do what I can for serving Krishna. Okay? Thank you. So, yes, ma'am.
The point about self-esteem, is there a Sanskrit equivalent of it, or is it just coined by modern terminology? Self-esteem. Is that a false ego or self-esteem?
Okay, it's self-esteem.
is this seems a little poetical with the Sanskrit word. Well, there is swabhiman in Sanskrit. There is abhiman, is not considered good. Swabhiman is self-respecting person. Now, it's ultimately not so much of what word we use, but what the conception is. We normally, when Dhruva Maharaj is insulted or neglected by his father and insulted by his stepmother, we don't really use the word ego over there. His ego, he is so egoistic that he couldn't tolerate it. So broadly speaking, there are three terms in English. Again, you could use broadly use Sanskrit for that. There is arrogance, there is pride, and there is honor. So the word arrogance almost always has a negative connotation. The word pride, generally we talk about as not the six hundred plus. Last anger, greed, envy, like that. But the word pride sometimes have a positive connotation also. Say like sometimes you have a hotel named Pride. Hotel Pride or Hotel Executive Pride or whatever. I have never seen any hotel named Hotel Arrogance. Arrogance usually has a negative connotation. Now, honor on the other side is a positive connotation. So, mana bhungam amrushyatam. Aho kshatri tejasam, mana bhungam amrushyatam. In the Dhruva pastime, the Narada Muni is appreciating, just see what is the nature, what is the glory of tejasam, what is the glory of the kshatriyas, that they cannot tolerate dishonor. And shouldn't we be tolerating dishonor? No, the kshatriya psychology is made up in such a way that they cannot tolerate dishonor. But their sense of honor makes them act honorably. And a fear of dishonor stops them, deters them from dishonorable actions. So in that sense, if we consider Yena Kena Prakarena Mana Krishna Dvesheth, so if our sense of honor makes us do the right thing, that may not be the purest motive, but we cannot expect to always have the purest motive while doing the right thing. It's like, Kama Sarva Kamova Moksha Kamoda Ali Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yena Purushampa. The good thing is to worship Krishna. The best is that we do the right thing with the right motive. But if you cannot do the best, still it is good that we do the right thing, even if it is not the right motive. If we do the best thing, but not necessarily the best motive. So if a sense of honor can impel us to do the right thing, that is not considered ego. And in the letter of Srila Prabhupada also where he says that some devotee had stopped following the principles and given up the practice of bhakti. So Prabhupada said, you have taken a vow before the deities, before the sacred fire, before the Vaishnavas, before the Guru. How can you break the vow like this? Don't you have a sense of honor? So a sense of honor means we have the idea of world of honor. So that, what is the value of a person if they don't honor their own world? So the idea is that honor, if it can make us act honorably, then it is not bad necessarily. So in that sense, self-respect or swabhiman, or self-esteem, if you want to use that word. The word self-esteem might be a modern psychological term. But the concept that we need to have a healthy attitude towards ourselves is quite very much there in the tradition. Now, what would be a healthy attitude? See, today, self-esteem is often thought of in isolation. That I am such a great person. Generally, in the tradition, self-esteem or swabhiman was seen in connection. And, you know, I belong to such a dynasty. I have such parents. Then how can I bring disgrace upon them by behaving improperly? Oh, I'm Kshatriya. Kshatriya is meant to protect people. I cannot injure people. I cannot exploit people. So generally that sense of honor came from our connectedness. And the ultimate connectedness would be Krishna. So if our sense of connection with Krishna makes us act honorably, if I behave in an improper way, then it is Krishna who will be defamed by that, because I am presented in the world as a devotee of Krishna. So that if our sense of honor and self-esteem or self-worth comes from our connection, rather than from our sense of
fragmentation. I alone am great, and I don't owe anything to anyone. I alone am great, and that makes me think that I am above everyone else. And that is a problem.
So let's move to the first point I discussed was that humility means that we don't let our ego come in the way of our service. The second point I'll discuss now is that audacity can also be used in devotional service. Bhakti is so inclusive that almost everything can be used. Now, the word audacity is somebody audacious. That means that they sometimes speak inappropriately, they speak disrespectfully. Now, of course, words have sometimes negative connotation and positive connotation also. Nowadays, audacity is considered positive also. Right? Somebody has the courage to speak the truth or courage to speak something, even if they may have to get some difficulties out of it. So it depends on connotation. And many words which traditionally had negative meanings nowadays have positive meanings. Traditionally, the word wicked meant cruel. So I was at a program, I was at a retreat in Chicago, and in nice, there some Western people had come for that feast. I mean, that for the whole retreat, they had a nice feast. So I asked them, how was the prasad? They said, it was wicked. What? Wicked? Then I read them, wicked actually means, it's a teenage way of saying excellent. So the meanings of words also change over time. But anyway, the word audacity sometimes has a positive connotation. Now, sometimes a devotee may speak in a way that might seem presumptuous. But if that is, so we may say, okay, the humility is speaking like this. But if the intent is to serve, then there's humility over there also. So I'll take a couple of examples, including the Prathamara example now. What is going on? So in the first conversation in Bhagavatam, when Bhishma is pacifying and instructing Dhrishti Maharaj, at that time he says, Tathapi kanta pishu vashya bhupan kampitam yanne sunsthita sakshat Krishna darshanamagatama. So he says, Krishna darshanamagatama. Just see, Krishna himself, sakshat, has come to give me this darshan. Pashya bhupanukampitam. Just see the compassion and mercy of this, the Lord, O King, Bhupa, the protector of the earth. But the first line is puzzling. Tathapya ekanta bhakteshu. Therefore, just see the mercy of the Lord on his pure devotee. So, Bhishma is calling himself a pure devotee. Tathapya ekanta bhakteshu. Just see that being for a pure devotee, how merciful the Lord is. Now, we may say, what is going on? Maybe somebody comes to the label, pure devotee, offer dandavats. You see, this is outrageous. Nobody, generally we say pure devotees, they don't claim themselves to be pure devotees. We have Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami saying that Jagai Madai Uite Moise Pavishta, that I am more sinful than Jagai and Madai. So how can a devotee say that I am so exalted that I am a pure devotee? Now if you look at the context, we will understand the intent over there. See, the verse is saying, just see how merciful the Lord is to his pure devotee, to his unflinching devotee. The word pure can be used for the specific word is ekanta bhakti, one pointed. That he has come himself to give darshan. So in the context, we see the purpose is not to glorify himself. The purpose is to glorify pure devotion. And how pure devotion attracts extraordinary grace from the Lord. The idea is that Yudhishthira Maharaj over there is hesitant to ascend the throne because he feels that I was responsible for so much bloodshed. I was responsible for this massive Kurukshetra war and I'm guilty and I should commit atonement.
and not enjoy royal opulence. So the Bhishma's thread of thought over there is that sometimes the Lord may ask us to do difficult service. And if the difficult service we do unflinchingly, we will get rewarded. So Bhishma had to do the difficult service of fighting against the Lord. He had the difficult service of being on the side of the Kauravas who were against the Lord. So he did that service lifelong. And what was it? At the end, the Lord gave him an extraordinary reward. So Bhishma's departure is considered to be the best departure, the ideal departure. That's how a devotee aspires to depart from the world. Beholding the presence of the Lord, just the way Bhandas Thakur departed. So, what the point here is that unflinching devotion or pure devotion will, even if it is difficult, it will get an extraordinary reward. And therefore, practice pure devotional service. So, the point is not that I am a pure devotee, the point is he is using himself as an example to illustrate the glorious reward that await those who practice pure devotion. So similarly, so here it could be used as audacious. How can you say that you are pure devotee? But no, if the audacity can help a person to illustrate the principles of pure devotion, can help a person convince something, then audacity is also usable in devotional service. And Prutha Maharaj is here doing something similar. When he is saying here, and my dear Lord, I have such an intimate service for you. This is service normally done by Lakshmi Devi. So what is he saying over here? His mood is not that I am better than Lakshmi Devi. His mood is that I am not going, it's not that I am serving Lakshmi Devi and I am going to be your intimate eternal associate. His mood is not to bypass or surpass. Bypass means somebody is there, you go by the side. Surpass means to come back better than him. His mood is not to bypass or surpass Lakshmi Devi. His mood is to highlight the mercy of the Lord. That my dear Lord, normally when the sacrifices are performed, Prabhupada talks about this. So in the sacrifices there is hierarchy. Sometimes the devatas, they just come in invisibly. And just the sacrifice is completed without any mystical sightings. Sometimes the devatas come. And generally the functional devatas come, Upa devatas. Sometimes Indra might come. Very rarely devatas like Brahma or Shiva might come. If only the sacrifice is extraordinarily performed. But almost never does Vishnu come in the sacrifice. In fact, the sightings or the darshan of Vishnu is so rare that even when the whole universe is in disruption, is disrupted. And then, say, the earth goes along with devatas to Brahma. And Brahma prays. All the devatas are there, the whole royal assembly there. Whole celestial assembly, not a royal assembly. But even then, Vishnu can't be seen. Vishnu communicates directly to the heart of Brahma. And then Brahma gives a message. So, Brahma, the sight of Vishnu is extremely rare. But that Vishnu himself has come to this fire sacrifice. And he has come not only to the fire sacrifice, he has actually come and given his darshan and his personal association, his personal touch to his. He has allowed Prutha Maharaj to touch his lotus feet and to get his hands to touch his lotus feet, massage his lotus feet, to put his head over there, to offer the obeisances over there. This is such an extraordinary benediction. And that too he has given when the sacrifice also has not been complete. So, if you consider Prutha Maharaj's situation, say if you consider a cricket match, if a player is 99 and the player gets out, it's such a tragedy. The player makes 100 and gets out, then everybody celebrates. Made 100 at least. So somebody is 99, and India cricket was one of the most famous cricketers. He was like 192 or 193. And at that time the captain declared. And these two players, after that, the player was so angry with the captain. They were in the same team, they didn't talk for months and months after that. So how would you declare that I was 192? So it's here Prutha Maharaj is like himself the captain and he's a 99 and he declared himself. Okay, I will not play. So now, even if he had completed the 100 sacrifice, yes, he would have got the fame that he completed a century of sacrifices, but nothing more. He completed 99 sacrifices and he got a result which he would not have got even after completing the 100 sacrifices. That is, he got the darshan of the Lord. He got the sanidhya, the personal proximity of the Lord. So here, he said, how merciful you are, O Lord, that you have given me access to yourself. So in transcendental mathematics, 99 is much greater than 100.
So,
99 is much, much greater than 100 for Prutha Maharaj. Because with 100, you just have 100. Here with 99, he had the Lord with him. And the Lord is infinite. So here, Prutha Maharaj actually, when he's saying that Lakshmi didn't get angry with me, but you will take my side, he's not creating a dissension between Vishnu and Lakshmi. Not at all. His mood is, in an audacious way, he's glorifying the process of bhakti and the mercy of the Lord. And this mood, if you understand, then we will see how he could make such a presumptuous statement. When a devotee is audacious, the devotee is not audacious because of ego. The devotee is audacious because of delight and jubilance in the Lord's glory, in the Lord's mercy. And when a devotee makes statements like this, you have to see the sentiment in the statement. No, and the statement need not be literal. Literal means it is not that Lakshmi is actually going to get angry, and not that Lord will have to choose between Lakshmi and Prutha Maharaj. But the sentiment over there. So when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that anybody who accepts Krishna as God but doesn't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as God, that person is to be condemned. That person will go to hell. Now, that is a statement expressing his intense devotion. That is not a literal statement. There can be statements, there can be many great Vaishnavas from other sampradayas who may worship Krishna devotedly but may accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a great sannyasi, as a great devotee. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that is also acceptable. If you can be inspired by the process of love that is offered and you experience the flood of love that comes by following the process, that is wonderful. So, but here Krishna Goswami is making a statement like that, we have to see the sentiment. It's that he's audacious. How can actually anyone who is devoted to Krishna go to hell? But he's saying, okay, you're devoted to Krishna, the mood over there is that same Krishna has come as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is so merciful. How can you neglect him? How can you not access mercy? How can you be so short-sighted? So it's an expression of devotional sentiment, devotional efforts. And we see it that way, then we appreciate the sentiment without getting into an unnecessary argument about the logicality of the statement. And so, it's the second point that devotee can use audacity also in devotional service. Any reflections on this?
We said that darshan of Vishnu is very, very rare.
Yeah.
But we also see that Krishna of 125 years, and everyone can see God 125 years.
Yes, that's true. That's
Ram, true. Ram is here for 36,000 years.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. So when the darshan of Vishnu is very rare, then what do we say about when the Lord descends? Yes, that's why the descent is some kind of extraordinary mercy. Extraordinary mercy. The three aspects to it. First is, in the Shiva Vaishnava tradition, there are different avatars that are talked about. And they say that the Lord Vaikuntha is like water in an ocean. For somebody who is deep inland, Vaikuntha is so far away. Says the Lord, when he comes and sacrifices, is like water in the clouds. It's there, but it's not reachable for us. Says that when the Lord descends to this world, it's like the rains. As long as the Lord is there, water, as long as the rains are there, water is available profusely. Like that, while the Lord is there, his darshan is available profusely.
And then they say, the Arch Avatar, the deity form of the Lord, is like the lake that is formed when the rains come. So the lake always stays with us. So the deity is always stable. That's how they say that the deity is the most accessible form of the Lord. So yes, when the Lord is there, definitely much more accessible than usual. So the challenge is that not everybody accepts Him as the Lord in that name. Because many people, like Duryodhan and other, think that He's just extraordinary prince. Extraordinary powerful warrior or something like that. Okay. Thank you.
So if the deity is the lake, what is the name of the Lord? The name of the Lord always takes the fulfillment of deity.
Name of the Lord who is?
Name of the Lord is always with us.
The Paramatma. Yeah, you could say, I don't know whether this particular answer is given. You could say, yes. We could say that there is water that is always nourishing our body always. The water is always there in our heart, in our physical body. That's how our life is maintained. The Super Soul is also maintaining us like that. So, that could be an extension of the metaphor. Thank you. So now, let's go to the last point. I was going to say that. So, bhakti centers on purity. Purity means simply the desire to serve. Purity is not actually anything abstract. Purity simply means that we have many, many desires in our heart. But purity means that the desire to serve Krishna is the most prominent. So, many other desires might be there, but as purification happens, the desire to serve Krishna becomes stronger and stronger. Just like, say, if we have a computer screen open with many, many windows which are minimized or adequate. Sometimes people have these big screens. Where you may have multiple windows open and they are all at different degrees of magnification. And then depending on what is important, then a particular window is maximized and it zooms out. So like that, in our consciousness, right, many, many windows are open. And there are many impure desires also, there are many practical things also we have to do, and there is the desire to serve Krishna also. So for as we become purified, the desire to serve Krishna, that window becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. That window not only becomes bigger, but it stays bigger. So purity is, we can see it more as a analog progression rather than simply a digital state. Like I am pure, like the pure devotee and not pure devotee. You know, seeing it like that, we are all at varying degrees of purity on one journey, on one continuum, on one spectrum. So from impurity to purity, it's not like one quantum leap. It's small steps that we take. And every moment that we try to focus on Krishna, we try to focus on serving Krishna, it's like there are many windows open, but you focus on the window that is open. That is of service to Krishna. And this is more software is a self-learning feature. If you open a particular window repeatedly, that's the window that becomes default. So like that, if we conscientiously cultivate the desire to serve Krishna, then gradually what is done conscientiously now will be done spontaneously eventually. And this is how the essence of purification is, that it transforms the conscientious into the spontaneous. So conscientious means my mind wants to go here, my mind wants to go over there, I want to go there, but conscientiously I bring it towards Krishna. I focus on the desire to serve Krishna. I have many desires, but I am here to serve Krishna. When we come to a temple, we may have so many thoughts that some devotee with whom we are angry, some devotee with whom we are irritated, some devotee with whom some devotees we may have hot war going on, with some devotees we may have cold war going on. We have all kinds of dynamics. And actually, if you see that devotee, you might feel a little annoyed, a little irritated, feel angry also. But I come to the darshan of Krishna to serve Krishna. Yes, the devotee is there. And I can't suddenly wish away that feeling. Just like if some window is open, we can't just eliminate the window. But I won't let that zoom. Just that conscientious effort. If we do, let me focus on serving Krishna right now. That itself, that choice itself is going to purify us. So purification is something not like an event that will happen in the future. Yes, it will happen, no doubt. But it's not just that. Purification is a choice that we can make at every moment by focusing on the desire to serve Krishna. And when we have the desire to serve Krishna, Then we know when to use humility in Krishna's service and when to use audacity in his service. And thus we march purposefully towards Krishna in all situations. So I'll summarize. I spoke on the theme of humility, audacity, and purity in bhakti. So humility means, then you remember, essentially, not let our ego come in the way of our purpose. So, lack of self-esteem is a problem, but lack of esteem for something bigger than self can be a bigger problem also. So, the idea is, a sense of meaning and purpose comes in our life to the extent we take responsibility for something bigger than ourselves. And the biggest reality is Krishna. So, humility means that not I am so fallen, not I am so great. It is that I am not so important that I have been thinking of myself. Let me think about Krishna and the service of Krishna. And in that mood, humility becomes a very valuable tool for focusing on something bigger than ourselves. And second point was audacity. A devotee can even speak audaciously or act audaciously if that is what is required for the service of Krishna. And I took three examples. Vishupitama saying that I am a pure devotee. To glorify how pure devotion gets extraordinary rewards. Ruthu Maharaj speaking that, that I am almost like displaced Lakshmi lady. He's saying that to illustrate how extraordinary is the mercy that he has been bestowed, and how merciful the Lord is. And Krishna Goswami saying that anybody who takes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is condemned. It's an audacious proclamation of devotion. It is not literal, but it indicates the magnitude of the mercy. It's not always literal. And last point was that by having purity, we can know when to use humility and when to use audacity in Krishna's service. So purity or purification, which is a process of purity, is not just a state, it is a process. And every moment when you choose to focus on the desire to serve Krishna instead of so many other things that might be open on the monitor of our mind, by that choice we are moving towards purification. So what is conscientious devotion leads to spontaneous devotion through purification. And when we have that, we strive to keep the desire to serve Krishna strongest in our consciousness, then we will know how to serve him in what situation. Whether to use humility or whether to use audacity or how to move forward. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any one question? Yes, please. Okay.
You were mentioning at the last point about purity. Purity means that we can differentiate between a desire to serve Krishna and our material desires. But then even within the desire to serve Krishna also there's so many different desires of serving Krishna in particular ways. So how to...
Okay. So within our desire to serve Krishna, there are so many desires to serve Krishna in particular ways. There is always the challenge that we are individuals and bhakti is not about denying our individuality. Bhakti is about channeling our individuality. So, how best we can serve Krishna, that we have to find out through a process of self-observation and consultation with others. So if we have a desire to serve Krishna in a particular way, that is not at all wrong, that is not material. It is not by default material. It could just be that that's the best way we can serve. If somebody has good singing ability, they want to sing for Krishna, then that is good. So I was in Calgary and I devotees asked me to speak on service attitude about it. And how we should all be ready to meet on services. And I spoke on that, I spoke on philosophy. And then after one devotee came and says, how is it that before me, another visitor had come, and before another visitor had come. And all three of us spoke on the same topic. So what had happened was, the management had been telling the devotees are not doing union services, all visitors they were telling about people. So it became a little odd. So then the manager, I was talking to the managers over there, they were saying that actually everybody wants to do classes or do pujari worship. But nobody wants to do, say, temple or cleaning or vessel washing or other services like that. So now, there could be that certain particular devotee services who doesn't align that. Certain services, just like in material life, certain careers get glamorized. Sometimes in devotee services, certain services get glamorized. And everybody wants to do their glamorous service. And there you could say it's because of ego. There might be some contamination of ego over there. So, we should be ready to do whatever service we are going to do. And if a particular service is required, even if it's difficult, no? This is a would say that where there is greater need, there is greater mercy. So, nobody wants to clean the temple, nobody wants to wash the vessels. And if you take it out, you get more mercy over there. So, in that sense, just wanting to do services which bring us in the limelight, which are glamorized, that you could say is a somewhat egoistic desire. But having said that, there are different devotees who have been blessed by Krishna in different ways. So ultimately, the test of what service we should do is what service gives us the most absorption. So the appreciation we get for a service is not as defining or is not as inspiring for sustainable devotional service as the absorption we get in service. So somebody might get absorption in giving classes. And somebody might get absorption in just making garlands or cleaning the temple or washing the vessels. So the absorption is more important. If somebody is washing vessels, then they are constantly wanting the whole world to do, see, I washed so many vessels. Well, that means they are not getting into that encouraging Krishna. And somebody is giving classes and they are constantly anxious. How many people come? How many people appreciate my classes? Or they are always calculated. You know, so many people came for my class, how many people came for that person's class. So there is no absorption over there. So if we just go on surface which is glamorous, or we avoid a surface which is difficult, that could be self-centered consideration, but not necessarily. We have to see, ultimately, what is the service that we can get absorbed in the most. And if we have a desire to do that service, then with humility, we can express it. You know, I feel connected with Krishna in this service. I forget everything else, my distractions go away. Can I do this service more? Ultimately, our authorities are guides. They also want us to be in something sustainable right now. So I wouldn't say that is a material desire. So we just continue serving and observe ourselves. Whether what is it that we like about service? Is it appreciation we get out of the service? Or is it absorption we get in the service? And if we get absorption and want to do that service more and more, it's healthy. It will connect us with Krishna more and more. Okay, thank you. Yes, Sandhya, you had a question?
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to analyze the opposite in Krishna consciousness in Shiva Prabhupada, when he, for example, in the concession of 16 rounds for us in 64, could be considered that opposite?
Prabhupada's concession of 64 to 16 was veracity? I don't know whether you can call it audacity. Because actually, if you see, in the Gaudiya Mutt also 64 round chanting was for people who were sannyasis, who were not doing any preaching. It is not that 60, even today in the Gaudiya Mutt, they don't have 64 rounds every day. And they had 64 rounds, what Bhagavad Gita specifically said was that anyone who doesn't chant 64 rounds is fallen. But 64 rounds was not the initial requirement. So Prabhupada basically, in the moment started, it was also people were withdrawing from the world entirely, just living within their own, living within the moment itself. And most of them did not have any other occupational duties to do. See, Prabhupada himself did not take a vow to chant 64 rounds. Prabhupada did not chant 64 rounds every day. So I wouldn't call that is a little dicey example. Like the point which Prabhupada was bringing was that he was extending himself to make the process of bhakti accessible. So that extension definitely, I would say a much bigger example of audacity would be the very fact that Prabhupada gave initiation to people who had no knowledge of Krishna, who had no culture at all, whose only regulatory principle was to break all regulatory principles. So that is far greater example of Prabhupada's devotional veracity. So Prabhupada's giving, extending his mercy all along, going at the age of 70 abroad to America and then traveling across the world. All that definitely Prabhupada's an excellent example of devotional veracity. Okay. Thank you. Okay, what do we do? Yes?
How can we get that mode? So, can we absorb in Krishna? Okay. How can we be absorbed in Krishna?
It's again, as I said, conscientiously. When the mind wanders, just get it back. It wanders, get it back. So as we do it, we start connecting with Krishna. So the mind has the idea that, oh, this is so nice, this is so nice, this is so nice. I want to watch this, I want to see this, I want to touch this, I want to eat this. The mind has various ideas of what is enjoyable. But actually, this Krishna who is supremely relishable, supremely enjoyable. So imagine if there is a computer or a phone or a device just programmed. Now, a device can be programmed in any way. It can be programmed wrong also. So a device can be programmed, if it sees red color, it says this is red. It can recognize. But if you just change the programming, it may say, it sees red color and it says this is blue. The computer or the phone doesn't recognize red or blue. It just responds to a program. So what has happened? Our mind has been programmed wrong. So because it is programmed wrong, as soon as it sees anything worldly, This is so enjoyable. But in real life, it's like saying, oh, red is blue. So our mind, because of the wrong programming, gets very attracted to worldly things. And that's how we get distracted from Krishna. That's how we're not able to absorb ourselves in Krishna. But, okay, even if we get attracted, let's attract it, we focus on Krishna. When we try to connect with Krishna, and we say, read about Krishna, like you're doing now, hear about Krishna, do various things connect with Krishna. Gradually, by doing this, we start experiencing, hey, this is fun. This is nice. In fact, this makes me more peaceful and joyful than so many other things that the world talks about. Then as we start getting that conviction, that's how we feel, okay. Even if mind says this, mind says that, it will become absorbed. So just by doing what we are doing as well as we can, in the service of Krishna, gradually get absorption. Okay? Thank you. Oh. What time should we go on? Okay, yes.
You said we should not think ourselves great or fallen. Hmm. What should we think ourselves as?
Okay, we should not think ourselves as great or small. How should we think of ourselves? We are all parts of Krishna. We are all servants of Krishna. We are all meant to serve Krishna. So, in that sense, every one of us is special. Because each of us has a relationship with Krishna. Each of us is loved by Krishna. But our specialness comes from Krishna, not from us itself. Even if we have some special abilities, we have been given those by Krishna. So, we think of ourselves as servants of Krishna. And as servants of Krishna, we can think, okay, what is there any special ability that Krishna has given me? Is there something which I can do good? And recognizing that yes, I can do this well, that is not humility, that is not against humility, that is not ego. If you remember that our ability comes from Krishna. So if we see our ability as a gift, then seeing our ability also will make us proud. But if we see our ability as our ability alone, then it can make us proud. But if we don't see any ability at all in ourselves, then that will make us feel inferior and make us feel insecure. So we see ourselves as Krishna's servants, and then we see what all Krishna has given us. That way, we see that we are special because Krishna loves us. We are special because Krishna has given us some gifts. Mm. And we can use those gifts in His service. Okay?
Yes. Initially or towards the end?
Did Ashwatthama run away from the battle while the battle was going on?
Okay. This is not related to the class, isn't it? Okay, fine. Did Ashwatthama flee from the battle in Kurukshetra? Yes. On the 15th day, when Drona fell, after that, at that time, initially before that, Ashwatthama had been fighting with the Ghatotkach. No, with some other war, and it got severely wounded, it got wounded. So he had retreated to treat himself and recover. And when he came back, at that time, he found that all the Kauravas were running up. Said, what happened? And he said that Drona has been killed. When he heard about how Drona had been killed, he was got very angry. So he charged towards the battlefield and he used his most powerful weapon, Narayanastra. And it was a weapon that could not be countered. So Krishna told everyone, just get off your chariots and offer obeisances. And Narayanastra just went above him and did not hurt anyone. Then he shot another unstoppable weapon. But Krishna again dodged that. And when both his most powerful weapons were foiled, he just felt so completely shattered. First his father had been killed and now his best weapons were foiled. All is illusion. Nothing works in this world. Everything is illusion. Seeing this, he just ran away from there. So he ran away because he felt completely frustrated. And now for the religion on the 18th day, when Shalya fell, when all the Kauravas fell one by one, that time also he fled. And later on, he saw Duryodhan. Duryodhan had been wounded in the fight against Bhishma, fatally wounded. So he, in the 15th day, he once ran, and 18th day also he ran. Because he just felt completely frustrated at not being able to succeed in the war. I'd be completely admitting repeated failures in the world. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Prabhu, which version of Mahabharata do you recommend for reading?
Okay. I think if there's any question related to the topic, we can talk. Otherwise, the last question will stop. I'm going to talk on to one. That's the last question.
Prabhu, you mentioned about the cultivation of this spontaneous attraction towards the world. So when you practice Vedi Sadhanavati, and sometimes they are sports of spontaneous attraction and love for the Lord. So can there be aspects of little Ragamula Bhakti in Vedi Sadhanavati, or is it just one transition and then we whenever we get to Ragamula?
Okay. So we sometimes experience spontaneous devotion while we are practicing sadhana bhakti also. So can we have glimpses of Ragamula in Vaidhi? Yeah, see there are technical classifications or categorizations. And one basic system in taxonomy is that taxonomy is a system of classification, the study of classification of how systems are made. That taxonomy never accurately reflects reality. See on the map, you say this is India, this is China, this is Pakistan. But if you actually go there, there is no need dividing line over there. Now of course in America, they are trying to construct a wall, a big wall over there. But that's because then there is no, sort of the geography seems very systematic, but the reality is much more complex. So generally, if we get too caught in terminology, that Vaidhi and Ragamula, that can often, that classification, that connection, all that can lead to a lot of confusion. But let's focus on the essential principle. The essential principle is that Maam Ichhaptun Dhananjaya. Krishna says that by sadhana, by fixing the mind, mantra, our attraction to Him increases. So that principle, whether it is Ravana Bhakti as it is traditionally conceived in the Bhakti Sama Sindhu, that the devotee thinks about some Radhatmika Bhakta and focuses on that devotee and that's ultimately that move. But the idea is spontaneity comes. So for us also, as we do disciplined devotion, spontaneity, there are moments of spontaneity. And at those moments will increase more and more as we keep practicing bhakti. So whether you want to classify technically this is Vaidhi and that is Ramanuga, well that could be, can go into technicalities of the Bhakti Sanat Sindhu, and look at that. So we could conceivably say that we are getting glimpses of what is way advanced before us, right now. So yes, the process of bhakti is progressive, but due to this progression, sometimes our consciousness may go way ahead of where we are. And sometimes the consciousness may go way behind where we are also. Sometimes we come to a temple and we feel nothing. Yes, I'm stone hearted. I don't have any devotion. And sometimes we come to a temple and we feel the ecstasy rather than pure devotion. So it's not either zero devotion or pure devotion. Yes, somewhere in between. See, but we just keep applying ourselves and we move towards the culmination, whether the Vaidhi Bhakti or Avana Bhakti, the culmination is Bhava and Prema, and we move towards that direction. Thank you very much. Pantrashin Bhagavata Ki, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki, Jai Gaur Bhakta.